Welcome to my brand new podcast where we can take a closer look at the pages of history. Today we are going to take to the workshop relations between Poles and Russians in the first half of 19th century. Very interesting period from a historical point of view when a lot of important events have happened and changed our world permanently. But also a time when in Russian partition the process of Russification, a procedure aimed to destroy Polish national identity, began to escalate. However, both in Poland and Russia, there have been a quiet voices of reconciliation. Could both nations have come to an agreement in the common interest in that harsh time of Polish history? Could Russians have put a pressure on the Tsar, who in the most absolutist manner of any European country ruled Russia indivisibly without allowing any opposition from the people? And could Poles have supported them in this initiative in exchange for help in gaining the coveted independence from the Tsar's boot? Every time when we want to understand the thoughts, motives of deeds of people from a particular point in time, the best option is to find these thoughts written on a paper, and today I will use Adam Mickiewicz-Dziady and a few historical texts from the epoch, trying to explain Poles' attitude towards Russians, which was not as conclusive as it might seem, and to find out if the said agreement was possible in any form. From the beginning of 19th century there was no independent Polish state. Only the Kingdom of Poland, which was a puppet country with limited autonomy from a Russian empire. Times, which author of Dziady refers to, falls on the rule of Tsar's representative in Kingdom of Poland, Nikolai Novosiltsov. From the beginning of the work, from the fore written by Mickiewicz directly to his audience, we learn that Novosiltsov was an embodiment of evil. The poet literally calls him an executioner who was an open enemy of everything that is Polish. His aim was to root out Polishness, and he began from the youth, especially the one connected with intellectual center of Lithuania, Vilno. After arrival of Novosiltsov, referring to the fore of Dziady, the true repressions have been started in there. Tsarist representative led to the closure of a few schools and arrest of many students who have been sentenced to hard work in Siberia or service in distant garrisons of Russian army. Referring to Mickiewicz, all these activities were caused not only by the possessor's will of rooting out the Polishness, but also by a threat of the impending end of the absolute monarchy across whole Europe. Mickiewicz in the fore compared the rulers of the time to the King Harold from a Bible, and indicated that the increase in repressions was caused by a fear of a new light and the faith of people in rebirth and resurrection. After reading the fore, the concrete and a very negative picture of Russians emerges. Subconsciously, we connect the person of Novosiltsov with the Russian rule over Poland, and we regard the Russian nation through the prism of unsuppressed occupier whose aim is to destroy Polish nation. But from a very last short poem added by Mickiewicz to the third part of Dziady called To Friends Russians, we can see that the opinion of author is not so homogeneous. In the poem, he calls characters and events from Decembrists' revolt in Russia, the uprising of a part of Russian military elite against the absolute rules of Tsar in 1825. Mickiewicz mentions Mikhail Bestuzhev and Konrad Rylejev, once of leaders of the revolt, both sentenced to death after the fall of the uprising. Author indicates that not only the Polish nation is enslaved by the cruel rule of Tsar, but also the Russians suffer from his absolutic impulses in suppressing any opposition. According to Alfred Gall and his article titled Confrontation with an Empire, Mickiewicz claims, "For the freedom is meant for all and must be realized in its fullness for all." Further, the poet presents Russians rather as a victims of Tsar's omnipotence than as occupiers of Poland. He says that both Poles and Russians are forced to do hard labor in Siberia. Many, in order to survive, engage in denunciation of all those who oppose the regime, and those who decide to speak out against it usually suffer death. At the end of the poem, author says that he seeks cooperation with Russians in the future a fight against Tsar. Mickiewicz claims that one of the pillars of an agreement between two nations will be the poetry in itself. In the end of historical document, the proclamation of the Polish centralization of 1853, we can read that Russians are presented as an enslaved nation which is deluded by the Tsar's propaganda and therefore supports his possessive policy. Referring to texts which I have mentioned before, it seems that there was a strong will of agreement from the Polish side with the Russian nation in common fight against Tsar, who was regarded as an oppressor. But of course, there were also extreme attitudes. In the famous Warsaw Salon scene, we can meet, among others, the figures of literary Poles who decided to collaborate with the Russian authorities and take part in the destruction of Poland's national identity. In this case, by throwing out from Polish literature all romantic ideas about the liberation struggle and resistance of the invader. They claim that the Polish Slavic spirit is not accustomed to brutal stories about war and struggle and prefers rather idyllic, idealized images of village life. In Dziady, the flagship symbol of the collaboration with the occupier was a pelican and doctor, close associates of Novosiltsov. Furthermore, in this scene, Warsaw Saloon, a famous comparison is made by Wysocki, a representative of the Patriotic Party, in which he compares the Polish nation to lava, which although cool and stagnant on the outside, has within it the drive to fight for freedom. An example of a man from inside the lava and of an extreme attitude towards the Russians is Konrad, for example, who in the first scene of Dziady, the famous improvisation, declares an almost fanatical desire for revenge on the invader and a fierce fight for independence. He is uncompromising in his aims, definitely abandoning any form of cooperation with the Russian nation. What is worth mentioning, the representative of clearly hostile attitude against Russians was also Kordian, a character from Slovatsky's drama called The Same Way, who was a member of a conspiracy on the life of the Tsar, the so-called Cadet School Conspiracy, which was to take place on the Saxon Square in Warsaw on 24 May 1829, during the coronation of Tsar Nicholas I as King of Poland. Summing up, as we can see on the basis of the examples, the relations between Poles and Russians ranged from at least very favorable to openly hostile attitudes. From a historical point of view, certainly a significant part of the Polish nation, especially the less educated, such as peasants, lacking the broader context of the situation, lacking insight into social and international factors, etc., bore a great grudge against the Russians, seeing them as responsible for decades of persecution and repression during the partitions, which made them perceive the Russian nation as a hostile nation that must be fought with fire and sword. In the case of Dziady, Konrad was a representative of the radical solution and uncompromising fight against the invader. The more degraded social strata, on the other hand, who were familiar with the international situation in the Russian Empire and with the Tsar's policy towards his own subjects, and who were not motivated by the radical slogans of a great national uprising against so-called Evil Russia, they saw the possibility of cooperation with the Russian nation, which they openly called for, seeing in it a greater chance for independence by gaining allies in the form of the Russians themselves. They emphasized that they suffered from the Tsarist regime no less than the Poles, and that it was in the common interest of both nations to overthrow the absolutist monarchy. Such a position was represented by Mackiewicz himself, which is best seen in his poem To Friends Russians. As in every occupation, there were also demoralized collaborators who for the right jobs and money were able to hand over to the Tsarist power their own family, if that family manifested any anti-Russian attitude. An example of such people can be the mentioned ones Doctor and Pelican from the third part of the Grandfathers, in English, Dziady, close collaborators of the totalitarian Novosiltsov. In my opinion, the most important and simultaneously interesting part of Polish-Russian relations, not only in the first half of 19th century, but during the whole partitions, was an idea of a common fight against Tsarist regime, when Poles could gain an independence and the Russians freedom from their absolutistic ruler. Similar texts, such as The Friends Russians or the proclamation of the Polish Provisional Government, had undoubtedly a great influence on the Poles, because they simply gave them hope that the idea of liberation from the Russian yoke still exists and is still propagated, and the elites ruling the country still haven't given up planning how to gain this independence. But on the contrary, they called on the nation to resist the invader. The impact of similar texts on Russians was different. In my opinion, none of them would be able to play a major role in trying to change the view of Russian society about their own rebels. And of course, just like in occupied Poland, there were in Russian Empire people who saw such an opportunity getting along with Poles, but they were just a small group without any bottom-up support from the society. The power of propaganda in the Russian Empire was extremely strong. The people, above all the simple people, for example the peasants, the petty bourgeois, did not dare and probably did not even think of any rebellion against the Tsar, who was identified with the entire majesty of the state, according to the maxim of Louis XIV, the state is me. Moreover, subjects of Tsar had and as a contemporary Russians, still have completely different point of view and the state issues and the state in itself. For them, there is only a collective, which in order to survive must be subjected to a strong and determined leader in the opposite to Poles, who appreciated the freedom of the individual and regarded freedom not just like an inner need, but also as a something absolutely crucial to live. Furthermore, the Tsar, as the direct guardian of the Orthodox Church, had a position that rivaled that held by the Pharaoh in ancient Egypt, and this position could only be successfully challenged by people whose horizons of knowledge went beyond the borders of Russia and possessed a comparative scale. It was this aspect that led to the Decabrist uprising, which was, however, and as I mentioned, carried out by almost the elite of Russian society and had virtually no support from the lower spheres. According to Emilia Jakubowska and her article called Between the Empire, an attempt and a postcolonial reading of the third part of Mickiewicz's Jade, modern Russia in Jade is an imperial power, and that power is the Tsar. She even compares Tsar's rule to a devil and an embodiment of evil. And as so, he was presented in Mickiewicz's drama. Moreover, I dare say, average Russians did not take Poles seriously, because they just simply couldn't. The differences in regarding what a state and a government, and in the further aspect, the whole shape of society should be, were completely different. Russians lived in a gigantic country, where many conquered nations coexisted, and they would hardly be inclined to look favorably at the cause from one of them to fight against the government. Unfortunately, since in the first half of the 19th century nothing indicated that such a fight had any chance of success, and as a consequence, mutual agreement between two inclined nations seemed to be just a far dream of some small number of circles.